Hello, I'm Harry Bucknell. Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Army Benevolent Fund, commemorating the end of the Second World War on the 15th of August, 1945. A tribute to the brave servicemen and women of Africa, China, Great Britain, India, Nepal, Malaysia, and the United States of America, who took part in the struggle for victory over Japan 80 years ago. The Burma campaign was a Commonwealth victory. 14th Army, commanded by the great general Bill Slim, was an incredible organisation. Its backbone was formed from the British Indian Army, which provided 8 fighting divisions, with a further 3 from Africa and 2 from Britain. Counted among its ranks, Burmese, Sikhs, Gurkhas, Punjabis, Rajputs, Kenyans, Nigerians and Ghanaians, while embracing every religion from Christianity to Judaism, Islam, Parsi, Sikhism, Jainism and Hinduism, to name but a few. The polyglot formation spoke 40 languages. That it was able to communicate at all in an age before digital technology, when carbon copies, duplicated skins and military signal reigned supreme, is remarkable. The reconquest of Burma was a triumph of leadership at every level. Fought by 14th Army, the largest Allied formation of the Second World War, its doctrines overturned the widely held belief that the Japanese soldier was invincible. Closing with the enemy at close quarter, in an alien environment, fighting intense, hard-fought engagements in courageous operations such as the Chindits, deep behind Japanese lines, or the great bravery, tenacity, determination shown in tumultuous battles such as Imphal, Kohima and Mike Tila. But of the million men and women from across the globe who carry 14th Army to victory, it is a growing reality that as time marches ever onward, so its many once proud ranks are reduced to but a frail handful today. In Voices of VJ80, the fight for Burma is told as far as possible by those who were there, from our own archive footage of veterans now sadly departed, combined with reflections recorded over the last week, including Joseph Hammond from Ghana, who served with the Gold Coast Regiment, Charlie Richards and Sid Machin, the last of General Wingate's 10,000 Chindits. All of them, aged over 100, no less spirited than when they were young men setting out on the greatest adventure of their lives over 80 years ago. We begin the programme at the top, with Colonel Simon Faulkner, one-time ADC, the charismatic Lord Louis Mountbatten, as he remembers the Admiral who was appointed Supreme Allied Commander Southeast Asia in August 1943, an appointment he held until his disbandment in 1946. I hope you enjoy the programme.
He was a towering figure in that theatre of war, and as the Supreme Allied Commander in Southeast Asia Command, there's no doubt in my mind that he exercised leadership at an extraordinary high level. Well, I think there are two things here which worked to his advantage. One is that he was, frankly, a monumental figure. He was an incredible communicator. He was a person who was imbued with leadership. He commanded respect. Even by his presence alone. But behind all of that, it can't be denied that he did come from an extraordinary background where he was connected to the royal families of practically every European country. And I do think that gave him a sort of awe which he played on to some extent, and only in the right way and only in a good way. And he also had, conversely, if you like, the common touch. And he was brilliant at talking to sailors, soldiers, didn't matter which one they were.
This is a message to every man in the 14th Army, from me, the commander. The 14th Army has taken Mandalay. The Union Jack flies once more over the great fort of Dufferin. This achievement has been an army battle. The 33rd Indian Corps and the 4th Corps have played a noble part in it. To the 33rd Corps has fallen the honor of capturing the city. This is a fair award to them for their hard marching, hard fighting, hard living, and hard dying. But every man in this army has his share in the triumph. Some time ago, Kipling wrote a very fine poem on the road to Mandalay. Well, I'm not interested in the road to Mandalay. What I'm interested in is the roads from Mandalay. Let's get going along them and see where they take us to.
March 1945, General Slim addresses his troops in Burma. Former Chief of the General Staff, last President of the Army Benevolent Fund, the late General Sir Mike Jackson, remembers General Bill Slim, the robust soldier's soldier whose steady arm kept a firm hand on the tiller that guided 14th Army all the way to the invader's final defeat at the Ford of Rangoon.
Bill Slim was, without doubt, in my view, absolutely accomplished technically as a general, but he went much more than that. The fact he was so loved by his soldiers just says everything about the man. He was very human, never sought the limelight per se. It came, of course, as a result of his extraordinary achievements and successes.
In February 1942, just before Rangoon fell to the Japanese, a disgruntled supernumerary major without staff grading was posted to Southeast Asia. The officer concerned was a controversial, combative and eccentric maverick who had a penchant for eating raw onions and the unnerving habit of working naked and brushing his pubic hair in public with someone else's toothbrush. A courageous and outstanding leader, Ord Wingate was a master of irregular warfare. Skills he had learned in Palestine under General Wavell, now his commander-in-chief in India, and later in Abyssinia, fighting alongside Haile Selassie in a successful campaign against the Italians. Ordered by Wavell to organise guerrilla units to fight behind enemy lines, Wingate developed the audacious, bold and daring idea of long-range penetration groups, consisting of 8 to 10 self-contained, lightly equipped columns of 300 to 400 men, working hundreds of miles inside enemy territory for up to 3 months at a time. Resupply from the air, causing havoc and disrupting Japanese lines of communications and supply routes. He was given command of the 77th Infantry Brigade, which included 3rd Battalion, 2nd Gurkha Rifles, 13th Battalion of the King's Liverpools, and 2nd Battalion of the Burma Rifles, which he developed and trained into a unique, revolutionary and forward-thinking fighting force of independent-minded, indomitable and determined men, capable of striking deep into the enemy's soft underbelly, the Chindits, among whose ranks included legendary figures like Mad Mike Calvert, a fearless sapper officer, and the monocled Bernard Ferguson of the Black Watch, who later became Governor-General of New Zealand. Former Chindit Colonel Charles Mercer, who passed away earlier this year at the age of 105, remembers an exceptional man.
Wingate was an exceptional man, really. He was quite a small man, not very military in bearing. He talked to us on two occasions, setting out his plans for Exercise Thursday. I have never before listened to anybody who so compelled my attention. He seemed to dominate his audience. He was an expert in guerrilla operations, as I'm sure you know. For the Chindits, he was a fearless and inspiring leader.
Joseph Hammond from Ghana, who celebrated his 100th birthday last week, explains why he volunteered to join the 3rd Battalion of the Gold Coast Regiment at the age of 18 in 1943. He goes on to describe the nature of jungle warfare in Burma.
It was not our war, but if you have a friend and he's suffering, you have to help him. We were very lucky. We fought in the jungle. it was very difficult. It was more difficult than the desert or the grassland. But, you know, desert, you can see everywhere. And then you see the enemy, you plan how to defeat the enemy. In the jungle, it's not like that. We have so many snipers on the treetops. They shoot from the tree. They killed a lot of people and very good shooters.
By March 1943, 14th Army was poised for reinvasion of Burma. The 64-day struggle for Imphal and Kohima, bravely defended by the men of the Indian Army and British regiments like the Royal West Kents, Dorsets and Berkshires, proved to be the turning point in the campaign. John Giddings, MBE, former national chairman of the Burma Star Association, who died in 2022 at the age of 99, served as a wireless technician with Ginger Ace's Hurricane Fighters on 17th Squadron Royal Air Force. Speaking to me 5 years ago, he recalls moonlighting as a kicker, dispatching vital supplies from Dakota's 31 Squadron on sorties over the battlefield of Kohima.
I got there and they said, "Dump your kit, that one's just ready to go, he's waiting for you. Go now, quick, quick, quick." So I ran over, jumped on, and took off. There were two other kickers on. I said, "What's on, where are we going?" "Have you heard?" I said, "No." I said, "I just volunteered for a hazardous duty." He said, "It is bloody hazardous." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "If we get back, we'll be lucky." I said, "Why? Where are we going?" He said, have you heard the battle? Never heard of Kohima?" So I said, "No." Well, he said, "There's a hell of a battle at a place called Kohima, and we're dropping supplies there. If we get through and get back, we'll be bloody lucky, because the Japs have surrounded Kohima, attacking it, and they'll be shooting at us. If we get by, we'll be all right." We got back once or twice with a few bullet holes, but we got back. Several were lost by dropping where they saw the sign, white sheets, to drop. But because they were so close, I think there was about six didn't get up high enough to get away from the hills, because Kohima was built on six hills. They flew into the hills and crashed. And they're all buried in that lovely cemetery at Kohima. Anyway, I think I did 9 drops over Kohima, and then of course we broke the Japs there. That's where we started to push them out.
Yeah.
As they pushed us out north, we pushed them out south.
At the same time, the Chindits launched deep into enemy territory once again, this time in greater force on the legendary Operation Thursday. Colonel Charles Mercer watched the Dider Force take off.
It was quite exceptional. Some 85 glider aircraft with their towing aircraft all lined up ready for takeoff on this moonlight night to land 150 miles deep behind enemy lines. And the need to pass over 7,000 feet high ranges en route. A terribly difficult venture, as you can imagine. The hustle and bustle of it all, it was spectacular. I remember those fragile gliders. They were not landing on the plains of Europe, but hopefully in some jungle clearance, all led by Brigadier Mike Calvert. Their first task on arrival was to prepare a runway suitable for follow-up troops. As I mentioned yesterday, my battalion followed a couple of days later.
But as often can be the case, things don't always go to plan. 101-year-old Sid Machin recalls the routine hazards of flight by glider.
Yeah, well, they weren't exactly comfortable, the gliders. I mean, we crashed on the first, when we took off, you had one on the short tail, one on the long tail, and there was something wrong with ours, and he cut loose and we crash-landed. And we thought, "Oh, well, that's all right, we're going back to the barracks." But he said, "No, hang on," he says, "there's a truck coming out to get you back to the airstrip, and you can get another glider."
Fighting was fierce. Colonel Charles Mercer once again.
The attacks became almost nightly. Quite often the Japanese were forming up in more or less the same place and coming in vast numbers, and they were getting mowed down. The smell and tension from decaying bodies was quite awful. Japanese increased their pressure on the block, and Brigadier Calford was concerned that it might be overrun. So he then decided to take a separate force, which 7NR was part of, to attack the Japanese in their forming up areas in and around the block itself. And that's where my battalion first got into action. 7NR lined up and did that attack. We went in with bayonets fixed and attacked, and it went on for most of the day.
Keith Chindit's endurance and success was US number one Air Commando.
They consisted of light planes which could carry, I think, three casualties, probably one lying down and two sitting. Now, these people came in firstly in the dry season. They had to find, or we had to prepare a simple runway. They were very light planes, and they came in. But as the monsoon came on, you can imagine landing, the runway were messy and muddy and deep and very dangerous. But I admire those pilots coming in, never flinching, and coming down in the most awful circumstances to get our wounded out. As you can imagine, from a morale point of view, this was a wonderful asset. We all thought, hopefully, we would get out.
Mule trains played a key role in moving the huge amounts of ammunition, kit and supplies the Chindits needed to fight and operate in the Burmese jungles. Characterful, stubborn but personable animals, Charlie Richards, 104, who enlisted into the 7th Battalion, the Leicestershire Regiment, and subsequently became a Chindit, recalls mule handling.
Dan takes these mules got up to here. They used to be the wisest animals you can meet. Yeah, I can just illustrate where we were loading the big leather panniers on either side of the mules. And a couple of gents went either side to load them up onto the mule. And then the cut them on hooks. And they come to the performance of tightening up the girth belt. Well, because the crafty monkeys used to keep the bellies extended, and you put them on, tighten the belt as you thought. And I said, right, that's all right. Then the mule decided to deflate his stomach. The loads up and down. One was on the top of where the a rider would be, and the other ones in between his legs. And he could put his back legs out and shatter the blokes, and then they take off into, because it was a tented area, and they charged through the tents, and the tents flying in all. It was amazing. We didn't know where to laugh or cry.
Not long after the beginning of Operation Thursday, General Wingate was killed in an air crash. His death was felt keenly. He was not just a division commander. His was the vision, the concept, and the mastery of the Chindit plan. Chindit veteran John Hutchin, who died at the age of 97 in 2021.
Well, Wingate, when we were in White City for 5 weeks, he started the march out to go and take Mogong. A genius who had these plans, and he flew in and out and conducted the campaign. And he flew out as we marched up to Mogong, and was killed in an aircraft. And we felt that was the end of the world, this genius that we'd do anything for.
Charlie Richards reflects on the death of his close friend, Sam Johnson, whom he thinks of every day.
Yes, I've not had too much time to dwell on the sentiment, I'm afraid.
No.
Fortunately, he lost his life. Yeah, it was tragic, that was. Yeah, I was. Because, I mean, everything's in close proximity. You might say, hear firing shots, say, where's it come from? And poor old son, he was on the rent gun. And the word comes through, there's a couple of Japanese tiptoeing down this path. So son was in position. He should have, if the gun had been in good condition, he would have been still unsaved alive today, but he would have survived that. Anyway, he pressed the trigger and nothing happened, misfire. So the natural reaction is you lean forward to knock the magazine up to have a look to see what's what. While he was doing that, he's jabbed, bang, like this, and he
got him.
Shot him straight between the eyes. You know, and it's a job of going and telling his wife after the war. That's tragic.
Following Wingate's death, the Chindits were placed under the command of the US General Joe Stilwell. Their mission extended, they moved a further 70 miles north to take Mao Gong. Late Colonel Charles Mercer reflects.
Much has been written about this success or otherwise. Was it all really worth it, and did we achieve what we set out to do? I'll have to leave that decision to many others, but we were always proud to be Chindits, and we were extremely proud of what we achieved in quite exceptional and difficult circumstances.
The late General Sir Michael Jackson recalls General Slim in advance.
I'm reminded of the most wonderful anecdote of Slim and his soldiers. If you can imagine, we're in the spring of 1945. Slim is advancing south, back over the mountains, onto the plains, and he's visiting a gunner battery, 25 pounder, in a clearing, and there. There are the gunners stripped to the waist, banging shells in, sweating profusely. And Slim just says, because he'd had to put them onto half rations, because the speed of the advance was such that the logistics were stretched. And he said, well done, boys, I'm just very sorry you're having to do this on half rations. To which Bombardier Bloggins says, don't you worry, sir. Keep the ammunition coming. We'll get you to Rangoon. I mean, boy, it says it all, doesn't it?
Despite the fall of Burma, it would take the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki on the 6th and 9th of August 1945, in which approximately 200,000 civilians lost their lives before Japan accepted the terms the Potsdam Declaration and surrendered unconditionally. Just after midnight, on the 15th of August, Prime Minister Clement Attlee spoke to the nation.
Japan has today surrendered. The last of our enemies is laid low. Peace has once again come to the world. Let us thank God for this great deliverance and his mercies. Long live the King.
Herbert Pritchard from Wrexham in Wales, now sadly passed away, was a gun layer on the Royal Naval Cruiser HMS Newcastle. Here he recalls picking up prisoners of war who had suffered so much during the Japanese occupation.
There was a sight which I would never hope to see again. There was like a crowd of dummies or hangmen or what, all states and shapes. We went over the side down to them, and they're all prisoners of war, our lads, and they were in a hell of a state. They had, all they had was little bit newspaper bags and that with the gear in. We took 10 each on a mess.
Goodness.
And they were all like skeletons. Now this bloke, he was ex-Marine. When he was captured, he was 12 stone. Now, he was 7. You've never seen any sights like him.
Field Marshal the Lord Richards of Hurst Monceux, Grand President of the Royal Commonwealth Ex-Services League, which is supported in its work by the Army Benevolent Fund.
We need to remember that World War II didn't end in May 1945, but rather in August. And I regret, from a personal and I think collective point of view, that a bit more isn't being made of VJ Day. This marked the end of a dreadful war and the sacrifices made on our behalf in a completely different part of the world than Europe. Secondly, I have the great privilege to be Grand President of the Royal Commonwealth Ex-Services League. The bulk of 14th Army was from the Indian Army and the British, West African and East African divisions. And would you believe that still today, the Royal Commonwealth Ex-Services League is looking after veterans who fought in Burma and, of course, many of their widows. So that's a particular privilege for me as the Grand President and all of us at work in that great charity. And then finally, a bit of a personal reflection, because my father, Captain John Downey Richards, Royal Artillery, was in the 14th Army and fought at Imphal. So I always feel this is particularly poignant when I remember what he and his many young friends who went off to war knowing very little what they went through on our behalf. And perhaps, if you'll allow me, I'd love to finish by recounting the Kohima Memorial message, which is, when you go home, tell them of us and say, for your tomorrow, we gave our today.
By the old Mool Main Pagoda, looking lazy at the sea, there's a Burma girl setting, and I know she thinks of me. For the wind is in the palm trees, and the temple bells, they say, come you back, you British soldier. Come you back to Mandalay. Come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can't you hear their paddles chunking from Rangoon to Mandalay? On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play. And the dawn comes up like thunder out of China, across the bay. Her petticoat was yellow, and her little cap was green, and her name was Supi Yorlet, just the same as Thebal's queen. And I seed her first a-smoking of a whacking white cheroot, and a-wasting Christian kisses on an heathen idol's foot, blooming idol made of mud, what they called the great gourd bud. Plucky lot she cared for idols when I kissed her where she stood on the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play. And the dawn comes up like thunder out of China, across the bay. When the mist was on the rice fields and the sun was dropping slow, she'd get a little banjo and she'd sing Kulalolo, with her arm upon my shoulder and her cheek again my cheek. We used to watch the steamers and the Hathis piling teak, elephants a-piling teak in the sludgy, squadgy creek, where the silence hung that heavy you was half afraid to speak. On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. But that's all shoved behind me, long ago and far away, and there ain't no buses running from the bank to Mandalay. And I'm learning here in London what the 10-year soldier tells. If you've heard the Easter calling, you won't never heed naught else. No, you won't heed nothing else but them spicy garlic smells, and the sunshine and the palm trees and the tinkly temple bells on the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. I'm sick of wasting leather on these gritty paving stones, and the blasted English drizzle wakes the fever in me bones. Though I walks with 50 housemaids out of Chelsea to the Strands, and they talks a lot of loving, but what do they understand? Beefy face and grubby and lure, what do they understand? I've a neater, sweeter maiden in a cleaner, greener land. On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. Ship me somewheres east of Suez, where the best is like the worst, where there aren't no Ten Commandments, and a man can raise a thirst, for the temple bells are calling, and it's there that I would be, by the old Moulmein Pagoda, looking lazy at the sea. On the road to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay, with our sick beneath the awnings when we went to Mandalay. On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder out of China, across the bay.
With thanks to Colonel Paul Corden, Paul Shenton, Tim Bentinck, Johnny Carmichael, Joseph Hammond, Joshua Hammond, Charlie Richards, Leslie Richards, Gemma McCullum, Sid Meachin, Trevor Meachin, and Neil Meachin for their help in making this programme. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to learn more about the Army Benevolent Fund, please visit armybenevolentfund.org. Series editors were Jenny Redman and Natasha Theobald, with technical support by Lola Abdolina and Adam Cousins. Studio editing by Michael Stiglianu. This has been a Gamekeeper production for the Army Benevolent Fund.